I'd like to welcome you to the keynote speech, which will be given by Stephen Skeena this morning, professor of computer science at State University of New York at Stony Brook. He's done a lot of work in the past in computational geometry and algorithms in general. I believe he serves in the editorial board of JEA, and has been involved in a lot of more recent work in bioinformatics and pattern matching and so forth. His PhD was in 1988 from Illinois, and let's see, among his notable achievements recently, a very notable achievement was setting up the Stony Brook Donut Hour, a forum for grad students and faculty to mingle. His sort of contributions shouldn't be disregarded. He also is the recipient of the Canadian Math Society Cool Math Site of the Week for 1999, and maybe he'll tell you about that later. I don't know. He is also the recipient of the 2001 IEEE Computer Science and Engineering Undergraduate Teaching Award. I guess that is the there's only one of those per year, so we're lucky to have him here today with us. And let's see, he is also involved in a number of things that will interest quite a few people here today. One of his more recent books is the Programming Challenges book, which is designed for teams that are training for ACM-type competitions. I've used his textbook in my algorithmics class, so he's also the author of that. He's got a recent book on combinatorical computing, and he also has a book on calculated bets to go along with today's talk. So without further ado, I give you Stephen Skeena.
Thank you very much. So today's talk is going to talk about some of the research in kind of biology or algorithms. Going to talk about some sort of less honest project on mathematical modeling and computer science that I think people will find interesting. And it has to do with a gambling system that we built. Okay, the story of how we use computer simulations and gambling and mathematical modeling to developing a gambling system to win a sport qualifying lot. This is me. I'm holding a computer to show that I'm using a computer. I'm holding some of the devices associated with the game of high lot. A basket called a cesta, which people use to catch the ball. The ball, which is sort of involved in the sport, we'll talk about that a little bit, and the money, which tends to reflect the gambling aspect of it. So I tell the story for a couple of reasons. First of all, I like to introduce people to highlight. How many of you have ever gone to highlight? And anybody here has ever gone to highlight? Okay? Nobody. Okay? Well, if you ever go to Florida, I encourage you to go watch a highlight match. Maybe I'll inspire you to get interested in that a little bit later. I'd like to continue to talk to people about mathematical modeling here, just like people know about that. And basically how gambling systems work. Work is actually joint work with several undergraduate students I had at Stony Brook. Roger Taylor, Mina McGarren, Dara Blatt, and Sandy Chen. So why am I interested in computers or gambling in the first place? And it happened back basically when I was a high school student. In high school I wrote a little program to predict football games, the outcome of American football games. And this was back in 1977, before many of you were alive. And it was a big deal for a high school student to program computers back then. But, basically I got to be a newspaper columnist out of the deal. I had a picture of me as a high school student predicting football games by computers. But we had a very simple model. Basically, we average the points that you score, that a team scores, with the team to the average, with the number of points the other team gives up. That would give you some estimate as to how many points that people score during the game. And that kind of model is very simple, is enough to predict about 65% of the games. So from this, I learned a lot of things. I learned simple mathematical models do have predictive power. The next year, I got a job sort of predicting football games against the split for another newspaper. And there, my program lost money at a rapid rate. So I learned with the simple mathematical models without predictive mind power when money is on the line. And that's one of the lessons for today, too. Around that time, I also got interested in Pilot. And we went to Florida on a family vacation. Now, what is interesting about Pilot? For today's purposes, let's think of Pilot as the family equivalent of curling. Okay, it's a local sport. Okay, that's how many people here don't care too much about highlight. But in the best league, people are very excited. The best league is Spain. It's a type of handball. Okay, where again the players take turns trying to throw the ball back and forth off a hard ground wall. Okay, using this big basket. Okay, called the cesta. And think of it like a variant of basketball or racquetball. And the ball is caught, it goes back and forth off the concrete wall. The interesting thing about it is that it's an extremely fast game. Okay, the ball, the fastest below that at the clock in my life competition came out at about 180 miles per hour, which is twice as fast as a major league fastball. So it's a very exciting sport to watch. Okay, and I encourage people to watch it. But the reason why it is popular, at least has been popular in the United States, is that it's legal to bet on it, okay? And several states in the United States where it's legal to bet on highlight, okay? Both those are now associated with the state of Florida. Any questions about the sport of highlight and how it works, okay? Now, you may be interested, why would you be interested in highlight from a mathematical point of view? Okay, it doesn't seem like a very mathematical proposition so far. But it's talking about the sport, the game of highlight, as you bet on it in the United States, has a very, very strong mathematical basis to it. I think everybody in the room will see why in a minute. Okay? When you bet on it in the United States, highlight match involves 8 players or 8 teams. Okay? And at any given moment, only 2 players play. Okay? They take the ball back and forth until one of them drops it. But the 8 players are basically arranged in a queue. So the score system is a score system that allows you to get 8 players into the match at once. Okay? And it works as follows. That is, 8 players, they're arranged in a FIFO queue, first in, first out. Each player, let's say, is numbered 1 to 8, just for convenience in thinking about it. So if we're going to play 1 and 2 are playing, 3 through 8 are sitting in the queue. 1 plays 2, winner keeps playing, loser goes to the end of the line. Okay? Can I give you a definition of that idea? First one passes to win 7 points, okay, is the winner of the match. Okay? So from that description, who is it intended to be? If you want to be a highlight player, if you want to win, okay, what position would you like to start in? Okay? Anyone want to volunteer? So far, it should be easy, yes. 1. Okay, 1 or 2, right? Why is that? Because first of all, 1 plays 2 to begin. So 1 and 2 are functionally equivalent to each other, right? But the important point is if you want to accumulate 7 points total, you're better off starting at the beginning, right? No advantage of starting late. So this bothered the people who were starting late, so they made the score system a little more complicated. After the 7th physical point is played, or in other words, after 8 played his first point, then now, every individual volley counts for 2. Okay? So now who has the advantage? Okay, let's think about it now. Why would we call player 8? Well, player 8 wins his first 4 points. Okay, 1 point for his first shot, 2 points for each of the others. He'll get 7 with only winning the first 4 points. So everybody see that gives some advantage to the bottom of the queue. Well, who does it really give an advantage to? Okay? And the bottom line is, I think this is a very complicated system. Okay? It's not obvious to me who has the most likely chance of winning. They will want to make a guess. Okay? I will claim it's not at all obvious who has the most likely chance of winning or who has the least likely chance of winning anymore. And so basically, under the score system, I'm going to give this example of two details for you to follow this early in the morning. Okay, but basically, the state of the game is represented by the fact that we've got a queue of showing where the players are. There is an individual event happens to top the two players that are not on the queue play each other. Winner keeps playing, loser goes to the end of the line. Okay? First question would seem like 7 points wins. Any questions about the scoring system? Okay? Actually, the scoring system in a world where they don't want to just figure out who comes in first. It should be clear that the first person to come in gets 7 points from wins. Okay? In fact, they also want to figure out who comes in second and third, okay, for betting purposes. And there, the scoring system gets even more complicated. Why is that? Because you kind of imagine that, suppose the first player wins the first 7 points. Now you've got a tie for second place with seven players in. And so there's some complicated tie-breaking rules, because there could be anywhere from 2 to 17 that could tie. They could tie for second place or third place. So by the way, they're very, very complicated tie-breaking rules. Okay? So who has the advantage now under this fairly complicated scoring system? And I certainly couldn't analyze it, but I think if you think about it, this is the kind of thing that would be relatively easy to do by a computer simulation. And so we did some experiments using a technique called Monte Carlo simulation to figure out what the biases of the scoring system were. Monte Carlo simulation techniques based on random numbers. They're experiments in some sense done in a computer using random numbers. Probably the most important technique of something with Monte Carlo technique, something called Monte Carlo integration. So don't let's say I gave you this painting by Picasso, and you wanted to figure out how much of the area of the painting was red. Okay? It would be very easy for anyone in here to figure out the area of the painting, because you just said the area of the painting is length by width, right? But how are you finding the area of that squiggly shaped thing? Okay? Well, suppose someone gave you a machine gun, okay? And you start randomly shooting bullets at the painting, okay? If you randomly shoot enough bullets at the painting, you're really randomly hitting the part of the painting, there's no bias for you to hit the red part of the painting more or less than proportional to this area over any other part of the painting. Does everybody sort of agree with that? If you're really randomly shooting bullets at the thing. So what does that mean? That would mean that you shoot 100 bullets at the thing, 1,000 bullets at the thing. Count how many bullets hit the red part. That over the number of bullets that hit the painting gives you an estimate of the area. Okay, and that's an example of how you might use random numbers for looking at a calculation. In this case, by integration, we're more interested in simulation and integration. But the technique of Monte Carlo analysis is important. So we do simulation, and again, for all of your programmers in here, it should be pretty clear now. It'd be pretty simple to write a computer simulation to model our iLife thing. What do? We initialize our current players from 1 and 2. We initialize the state of the queue to the rest of the players. Okay? We, say the player score to 0. So long as the current winner of the last point is less than 7 points, we flip a coin to figure out which of the two players wins. Okay? And 1 or 2, depending on where we are in the game, to the point of the winner, keep the loser at the end of the queue, and then, DQ the top players in the queue, and keep going until we have the winner. Okay? So, doing that, it's a fairly simple program. I assigned it to my class at times to write a simulation like this. And if you do that, you'll find that there will be a strong impact of where you start in the queue on what the outcome of the highlight match is. Okay, so for example, turns out that when you go at the bottom of the match, players 1 and 2 still have the strongest advantage of winning. They have almost twice as much of a chance to win as players in the 7th position. Okay? Why is doubling at the end good for the first player? Okay, it's designed to help the player at the bottom of the queue, but why is doubling at the beginning, at the end of players the game player has played? Be good for the one of the starting players.
Right,
so one thing's going to happen is the first player is either going to win or lose, right? If they win, they got points. If they lose, they're now immediately benefiting from the doubling. Okay, so it helps them too. Sometimes the player 7 is the one who gets shafted on the deal. And there's a strong bias to who wins. And there's similar bias about who comes in second and third. Okay? So, doing this kind of model, we see the case that the life is not fair if you're a high level player. And we compare the results to actual results from previous highlight matches. Okay, we compare sort of 4 seasons of results. Our simulation is basically correct. 1 and 2 have the highest chance of winning in practice. 7 has the lowest chance of winning in practice. The numbers here are not as strong, because the bias of the school system is not quite as strong as shown up in my simulation. But that's because the matchmakers know, people who schedule highlight matches, know that certain positions are good and bad. And to try to make the match fairer, they put the better players in the worst position. But even so, there's a sort of strong bias. So now that I know what the probability is of each number, of each combination coming out, okay, and we're now ready to start making money. Well, you have to now start looking at betting. Okay? In my life, I just think like horse racing. You're allowed to bet on certain combinations of who comes in first, or second, and third. Wind plays and show are the bets for first, second, and third. There's a sort of more exotic bet called the Quinella, where you bet, where you pick 2 teams, and you bet on who comes, pick one of them is going to come in first, and one of them is going to come in second. And if someone is going to come in first and second, either of them you win. Okay? That is never go highlight betting. I strongly encourage you to bet Quinellas. Not that you actually have a good chance of winning, but so those guys are having an interesting time. Because what makes this sport system fun is if you're sitting there watching the bet, and you have a bet coming, and you say, gee, if one comes in first and 4 comes in second, I win, you can see a scenario ahead where if the points play out in a certain way, you will win. Okay, so it keeps you active and thinking about that. With Quinella, you always think you have a way to win. Okay, you don't, but you always think you have a way to win. Okay? The most important bet, or the most fucking risky bet, okay, is what we call a trifecta, where you bet on who's going to come in first, and who's going to come in second, and who's going to come in third. If 8 choices from comes in first, 1 set person comes in first, there's 7 possibilities from comes in second, then there's 6 possibilities from comes in third. Also, there's 336 combinations, okay, so you pick which one of them is right and hard, the bet takes a high for returns. And our betting system, as it turns out, will bet trifectas most of the time. So let's look at the distribution of trifectas. Now, if you think about it, there's a bias of who comes in first, and who comes in second, and who comes in third. There's a very strong bias as to which combinations of first place and third come in. Okay? In fact, certain combinations, because all players are equally skilled, certain combinations will come in 1,000 times more often than others. Okay? This is a very strong bias. Okay? The best ones, the ones that come in most frequently, are something like 1-3-2, 1-4-2, things like that. All the numbers at the beginning of the queue. The ones that come in worse are all the ones that come in at the bottom of the queue, like 5, 7, 8. Okay? Some of these are incredibly terrible bets, okay? In 17 years that I analyzed one particular highlight outcome, the 4 trifectas that our system predicted were the worst never happened. So anybody who bet on that might as well just lift up their ticket before the match, okay? It's very hard for, why would it be hard for 6, 7, 8 to come in? Okay, come in 6 wins, 7 come in second, 8 come in third. Think about it. I mean, somehow the players at the beginning of the queue have to somehow not get very many points. Till player 6 comes along, we'll have to get a lot of points, while still beating 7, while letting 7 get a lot of points. Very, very difficult for all guys at the bottom as well. Does everybody see that? If you look at it, the combination 1-2-3 did not come in as the best combination. Why is that? Anybody can think why 1-2-3? Even though you're all at the top of that, yeah?
One of the first 2 people has to lose,
right? Okay, so somehow it's hard to both 1 and 2 to both do extremely well. Okay? But by the way, there's strong biases, okay, in here. And so maybe we're ready to make money gambling. Okay, we know how what the probability is of all trifectas coming in equally, if players are equally skilled. Unfortunately, that's not enough to make money. Okay? Most people have watched enough highlight matches to know what combinations are good and bad. Okay? So we need to factor in other things. We need to factor in how good players are, okay? So what do we do? We draw a program that every night would go over the web and obtain the next day's highlight match. That's nice highlight matches. Okay? And we build up a database of results, basically what players started in what position and how did they do the next day. Okay? And from this, we can answer questions like whether there are differences between good and bad highlight players. You know, it's clear that if we're going to predict based on player skill, we need to be confident that there are differences in player skill, consistent differences between players. So here what I do is I show you a dot plot that shows the winning percentages, okay? I consider the correlation coefficient of the winning percentages of players 1 year compared to how they did the next year. And there was a strong correlation. Okay, that says that somehow the players win a lot this year, they're probably going to win a lot next year. Okay, and that tells us that there is a significant difference between player skill. The second of the correlation of how well a highlight player performs is similar to what I would say the correlation in baseball batting average from 1 year to another. So we know that somebody's a good hitter this year, likely they're a good hitter next year. Okay, the correlation is stronger, in fact, for how good a highlight player is from year to year and how good a pitcher is from year to year in baseball. Pitchers are a little less consistent than that. So now what do we know? We know that certain players are better than others. We know how often they win games. But that's not really what our simulation needs. If you remember back to our basic simulation, in order for us to factor in player skill, how do we factor in player skill? We have to figure out what is the bias on the coin flip that we're going to be putting on, right? We want to know what percentage of the points does a particular player win, okay? So that's really what we need to factor into the skill. So bottom line, by running simulations, we know that if a player starts in a particular position on a game and finishes in a particular place, we know what the expected number of points they had to score in order to achieve that kind of a result. And so we know what player starts with what result from these kind of simulations. We can work backwards to get an estimate for what fraction of points the player wins. Okay? But does that give us enough information? And the answer is not quite, because again, our model simulation needs to know if I am playing Owen in a highlight match, we go put on our CESTA, what are the chances that we're going to, who's going to win the point? What's the probability that I'm going to win my point against him? And all we know is the probability that there's a percentage of points we win against the world. Okay, we need to know how do we combine that, okay, to figure out what is the probability that I'm going to use. And it can be clear this kind of a result differs depending upon what kind of sports you play. So for example, we would have a call contest, okay, where we're going to be competing against you to see who's taller. You might be taller than 51% of the people in the world. I might be taller than 50.09% of people, 99.99% of the people in the world. But he would beat me in the tall contest every time. Does everybody agree with that? In coin flipping, he may have a record of winning 55% of his coin flips, and I might say winning 40% of my coin flips. Okay, but there, on the other hand, it's still an even match against us. So somehow we need a model that can combine these points and reflect the weaknesses of the score. So bottom line, we came up with the following formula, which may or may not interest you. We needed the properties that we, probability that A beats B is a probability. We needed to be symmetric, the probability that A beats B is 1 minus the probability that B beats A. It should be the case that two people were equally skilled, okay, that they should have a 50-50 chance of beating each other. Okay, no matter how terrible Owen and I are both at highlight, if it's equally bad, someone's going to have to win the point, right? And finally, we need some kind of a non-linear term to reflect the fact that in different types of contests, there's a different strength, either amplifying or minimizing the differences between us. We'll be much faster than that. Bottom line, we came up with a function that looks something like this. And these curves that I've drawn here, it shows the impact of turning the knob. If you get from a place where player skills, differences in skills don't matter, to where there's a very sharp difference in the outcome of who's winning. And by experimentation, we figured out what was the budget factor that gave our simulation the best result.
So now we know how to factor in how skilled each player is to predict the outcome of each match. Now are we ready to start making money betting in Highland?
And the answer is unfortunately not.
Because what you need to do is then figure out how is it that Highland pays off. Okay? When you bet on a Highland match, it's like betting in a horse racing. In that, it works under a what we call a parimutuel system. Okay? Maybe one way to think like a casino. You put a bet down. When you put your bet down, you know exactly what it's going to pay. Right? You bet on red, you double your money, you win. In the parimutuel system, what happens is all the money that people bet, okay, is divided up and put into a pool. A certain percentage is taken out by the house, okay, to pay for running the Highland matches. And then the remaining money, which is about 80% of the pool, is divided up among the winners. Okay? And so it's a different system. I'm not really betting on the house, I'm betting against other players. Okay, so this thing has some interesting implications. Suppose I were going to a casino carrying a laptop computer. I took my money, I sit down, and I start winning game after game with blackjack. What will happen to me?
They will want to make money.
Yes, okay, you know what's going to happen to me. Now suppose I walk into a highlight montage, put me in my laptop computer, start making bets, and win bet after bet after bet after bet. What is the management going to do to me? The answer is going to buy me a drink and say thanks for coming. Okay, why is that? Because the house is making 20% of every dollar that I'm betting. Okay, I'm winning from all the other bettors in the house. Does everybody sort of see that? Okay, so it's a much friendlier system. When you go to a horse racing track, they want you to bet. When you go to a casino, they want you to lose. Okay? And that's a different philosophy. So anyway, based on this, we had outcomes of different bets for the last 4 years. We've done for several years worth of data on what each bet paid off. Okay? Based on that, we just figure out what would be the likely payoff on every bet. Okay? And now we know the probability that any event is going to happen and the probability of any payoff. Okay? Now we'll be ready to make money. Okay? Well, when we do this analysis, in fact, we can show that a small number of bet opportunities in a typical highlight event have a positive expected return. Okay? So how can we take advantage of this phenomenon? Should we go and bet a lot of money on one of these positive things? And the answer is unfortunately no. Okay, so remember, how is it that the highlight content makes its money? They're basically betting, they're taking 20% of every bet that I am making, correct? And the money that is somehow being returned is being the result of having to divide it up, all the payoffs, all the money that is bet by other people. If I bet too much money on the map, basically I'm flooding the pool, and every incremental dollar I bet, the return, if I am right, is going to be less and less. Does everybody sort of see that? Okay? So, one problem is that the more and more I bet on any particular event, okay, the problem my return will eventually become negative once I bet enough. Expected return will eventually become negative. And unfortunately, it becomes negative very, very quickly. So basically, our simulation shows that for a small number of bets, okay, we have a positive expected return so long as we don't bet on them. Okay? The moment you start to bet on them, of course, you start to impact the pool. And we have to model what our impact is. Okay? And unfortunately, not enough people bet on highlights, and the pools are quite small. So after we calculate our impact on the pools, it's an even smaller number of positive returns. Okay? But there are some. Okay? But the bottom line, this is why when you talk to real investors, they don't invest at the racetrack or at one race. There are two reasons. One is the sort of transaction cost. The fact that the house is keeping 20% of all my money bet means I have to be reasonably smart in order to make a profit. But the other thing is that even if I see a profitable opportunity, there's not much liquidity in the highlight market. Okay, the moment I start putting something in, it's not, I can't bet more than $3 on the outcome before it's not worth investing. Okay? But after that, so what do we do? We now have a system that can do the following. Every night we go over to the web, download the schedule of the next day's matches. It would then, for every game, it would calculate, every player would get a measure of how good they were. It would then compute the pairwise matrices of what the probability that I will beat you on any given point. We then run our simulation 500,000 times or a million times, figure out what the outcome was going to be in that data match. We compared the results to our payoff model to figure out the most advanced, what were the most advanced patient bets. Okay? And then we have to make the bets. And to do that, we decided to use a computer to do it. The highlight program that we worked with had to deal with this off-track betting operator, where they had a telephone dial service. Okay, so suppose that you're sitting in your office and you wanted to place a bet. Or you could use the touchtone telephone to dial in the bet, actually. You type in your account number, you do this kind of thing. This would be helpful if you're sharing an office with someone. If they didn't want to know you're betting on, you know, on betting. Or if you wanted your wife to know that you were betting. But for what our purposes, the bet would be made by the dial tone. We programmed the modem, okay, to do the dialing for us. Okay, so basically the phones were are best proposed in by the computer, okay, by using the da-da-da-da-da-da. And so ultimately we had a completely hands-off system. There was no human involvement in the analysis style and that, the way you place the behaviors. So how do we do it? Okay, well, the bottom axis shows our the amount that we bet each day. Okay, you know, a relatively small number of dollars each day. The upper axis shows our profits over our bank balance as a function of time. And you can see that we show a strong positive return during this event. Basically, in our initial phase, okay, we turned out $250 stake. It gave us a capital return of 227% over the betting period that we controlled. It was essentially an 18% return for bet. We later came up with another revised system that jacked up our account up to $1,500, okay, before the program broke because of the software bug. Okay. It was very good to have a student development system. Unfortunately, when the students graduated, then the system broke, and that was the end of the system. But that was a good run-off last year. So here's proof of all things, our receipts for the dial-in service that we placed our bets. So ultimately what happened, the postscript to this whole process. Eventually I got another student on the project, and we got to do some work again. What's interesting is, unfortunately, the highlight frontline for the bet app, the one in Connecticut, closed, okay. Highlight is not as popular as it used to be because casino gambling, people seem to prefer betting on casinos instead of watching Highline matches, which I think is a terrible thing. But nonetheless, the Highline front line has been closed. So I do encourage you to visit the Highline front line in Florida before it's too late. But we now have, we got our system working to the point where we could, in principle, bet on Dania or Miami. I mean, the hot front line in Florida. But in the United States, there's laws against using the telephone for interstate gambling. Okay, and there's sort of these racketeering laws that they use to catch mobsters and gangsters and things like that. And so betting some of those front times might be principle violating federal law. So we never actually defended Florida. But all the things from the system, you know, we donated to charity. And and basically that way now the system's open, I can now tell people about it. And it's sort of a nice story. As a professor, I'm supposed to write books instead of make books. Okay, and so it's sort of a more honest way of living here. But it's interesting, I do get a lot of response from people who read the book. One thing I've learned is just to Google them, okay, and you learn that many of them are involved in difficulties with the Securities Exchange Commission or something like that. Any questions? So what are we doing now? Again, my honest research interests are in algorithms and bioinformatics and things like that. But there's part of me that likes doing this kind of stuff. So we have recently set up a little financial engineering lab, okay, where we do stuff to use some of these techniques to analyze more interesting financial markets. And again, a lot of the techniques that I talk about in this talk really are widely used in the financial industry in modeling, modeling stocks and the type of different equities and things like that. So for example, Monte Carlo analysis, these random walk models that are widely used in pricing options in financial markets. And so we'll play around a little bit with that. we're doing a little bit of, we have a kind of interesting project now on natural language analysis, where we're, the Spidering program is now downloading every English language newspaper, online English language newspaper in the world, which is about 1,200 of that, that seem to be functioning on a daily basis. And we're running it through, we're identifying who's, all the people, places, and things, and how they're interacting with each other, and somehow trying to get some kind of a model of how the world works. Somehow once we know how the world works, maybe we'll have a better idea of understanding how certain equities are going to move, and things like that. But it's very interesting to think about how the world works. Any questions? Okay. So, what I'd like to end with is, I will hopefully keep on time, for maybe you get a big time for your latest schedule. I understand we have a lot of young computer scientists in the room. I wanted to give you some advice as to how to be a good computer scientist, or how to do it, What would you recommend for, people who come for advice? One thing I strongly recommend that students do is try to work on cool projects, okay? And cool means interesting and exciting. And I think I learned more from that simple little football program predictor than I did from a lot of the classes that I had in school, okay? That somehow, building a little program, a simulation, seeing how it works, why doesn't it work, how do you make it better, why still doesn't it work, is I think a very, very good, I think that's a tremendous lesson when it comes to learning about how to build models of the world. And not just that, it doesn't have to be a mathematical modeling project, but things like, there's all kinds of cool things related to the internet and sports and games, and I strongly encourage people to do that kind of thing, okay? One thing I recommend students do is, in general, with their training, start to be as broad as possible. There's always a trade-off between how deeply you go into a subject and how many things you know about, okay? And I found that actually it's more important to go to be broad, sort of hard to know exactly what you're going to end up doing, okay, years from now. Okay, certainly when I was, if I was a kid, you could have predicted that I was going to go and get into gambling. But you probably could not have predicted that I was going to start doing my honors research in bioinformatics, for example. And so being able to learn about biology, being interested in a lot of things around the world is kind of important. The speaker last time talked about how it was important for any of us in doing the modeling project or something like that to really learn what is really going on in that kind of industry. And be willing to get outside your discipline and look around. Those who are interested in doing research or something like that, I strongly encourage you to go to a little graduate school, follow what all those folks say, except go to Stony Brook, okay, and come to get a PhD there. And finally, I encourage you to learn from good folks, and I have a full suite of available for anyone who's interested. Basically at this point, I'd like to have to pick any questions about gambling or modeling or anything like that. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, question. Okay, so the people who are training for a programming contest, obviously the thing I most strongly recommend is, again, I have this book on programming challenges. Now, this book is designed to be a training guide to people learning about. What I like about programming contests, these programming contests are fun because, first of all, there's a lot of mathematical problems and algorithmic problems. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things that's going on as well. And it's also the technique of learning how to find the quickest and dirtiest program to get something to work. That's not necessarily what they teach in school all the time. And that's not, if you take a software engineering class, they probably will stutter at some of the things that you should do in a programming context. But it's still, I think it's a very interesting and good way to think. And so I very much like, I'm the coach of our programming team at Stony Brook. And what I recommend that people do is, I recommend the book, but the other thing that I recommend people do is to train using some of these online judges. Okay, I don't know how many people are familiar with the University of Iowa robot judge. Okay, the book I have here, my co-author is actually the guy who runs this robot judge in Spain, and this judge is basically a collection of now probably close to 2,000 programming problems. where you can write a program and send the program to the judge. It will come back and, just like the ACM does, tell them whether your program is right or wrong, but won't tell you why it's right or wrong. Won't give you the test case. So it's a great way to practice for the programming contest. You get the same kind of experience of sending it in back, getting back the answer that it's not right, coming to yourself, oh, the judge is wrong, won't send it in line. Okay? And then, you know, you keep iterating on it. The book basically gives advice, techniques to solve sort of the most important classes of problems. You'll learn about dynamic programming and basic number theory and exhaustive search and things like that. But the other thing is that it has edited versions of about 100 problems on the go. So these are problems that I can't really make the descriptions clear enough, but I think they can be read well. I mean, a lot of the descriptions on your judge, unfortunately, they're sort of problems that were written in China and translated into English by the Spanish students, okay, there. So they're sometimes hard to follow, okay, but hopefully these are easier to follow. And again, with our team, I don't know how much your teams work. My teams, typically we select them about 6 weeks before the semester starts, and typically before the contest. And then we'll get together once a week and go through problems, and we'll break into teams, and they'll have little contests on their own. And so we'll see. Hopefully we'll do well this year. Our match is about a month, so hopefully we'll do okay this year.
I guess the difference between mathematical modeling and statistical modeling.
Clearly there is a combinatorial, this process, this random process of who's going to win a game that is quite independent of statistics. So there's a simulation aspect of it that is not statistics. Predicting how good a player is, or how good a player might go against somebody else, might be considered to be statistics. But there's sort of this discrete event analysis that's probably not really statistics in here. So that's maybe why we call it mathematical modeling. Although obviously it depends quite heavily on statistical ideas. Yeah?
Do you use Flutter in your Montebello simulations about whether a very favorable move might not take, for example, a really good player might lose, or not a good player?
Well, yeah, so if you have a probability, this is a probability that I would beat you, okay? So unless it's like this whole context where you will always beat me, or you imagine maybe some kind of, so the answer is the probability that I will beat you is the probability. So whether that probability is not 1, the coin might flip against me. And so there's no question that with the level of biases that are occur in real life, it's quite often the case that the best player will lose to the weak player. Okay? But it just doesn't happen as often as the good player beats the weak player.
What kind of
distribution do you see? A distribution. Well, basically, again, we have that function there that given our probability of winning against each player beating each other player, given that we know the probability of each player against the world, how many points they win. You know, one player may, in general, win 30% of his points against the world, and another player will win 43% of his points against the world. From that, we use the formula I gave up there to predict what's the probability I will beat you. And then it's just basically a uniform distribution picking coins according to that, flipping coins according to that probability. Okay? So, yeah. Yeah, those roles are in general, but the question is, do we know that they were moving against similar school things? The answer is yes. The way it would work, a typical highlight front on would have a stable players that would play there the whole season. So you know that all those points were scored at that front time. And over the last year. So we do know that the distributions are somewhat similar. But we don't know, for example, they play similar players. It turns out, for example, that certain players, so it's not completely, they're sort of the same players at the same place. So the distributions are fairly similar. But actually, they tend to be sort of the morning players and the afternoon players. There's sort of two highlight sessions a day, and you often have the better players playing at the times when the hall is more crowded. So there's probably some bias on that based on when they played. What would happen if you had a morning player playing an evening player? But we end up in this station being one pool of players. Yes?
Is real-life simulation
that possibly some radio going on? Right. One thing that people were afraid of is that one reason why, in fact, I think timeline is become less popular is some of the betting on people. Right? You know, you're somehow betting, what's the probability, what is it? I think this player is going to score more points. Now, in horse racing, you know that the horse doesn't have a bet on who's going to win. But you don't know that that's true for the player, okay, itself. So, there have been a few incidents in highlight history where people have been caught fixing highlight matches. The fact that our models predict reasonably well the probability of what happens convinces me that most of the matches were not fixed. And not only the matches were not fixed, that the system that is statistically doesn't have a lot of matches, we didn't worry about fixing. Okay, a lot of people seem to worry about it. We did not have to. And the reason is that we're making large numbers of small bets, and you know, and we assume that people are not as dusty enough to fix every match. Yeah.
Well, how many players
were
involved in this? Because if you had a small number of players, each player will be playing against a world with a different skill level because removing the best players in the world will increase the skill level.
Right, so let me find out what's the probability that I will beat you. Okay, again, there are lots of complicated factors that you could do. In an ideal world, it would be a sport where they would publish statistics. What would be, how much, you know, we would read the news, we would look on the website, and we'd be told exactly what happened in every point played. If we had that kind of information, we would then be able to do that kind of analysis. Unfortunately, all we get are who started in what position and who came in first, second, and third. So we don't even know how many points they had at the end of the match. We don't know what happened to all the other players. So we have to try to come up with an estimate. You know, there's a lot of fluidity in that already. Okay, but our system does give better players better chances of winning. Okay, it does a better job of predicting the outcome than the usual role players were
equal. Well, I was
wondering
if you
found
players were involved.
Okay, so a typical stable would have about 30 to 40 highlight players in it. Often 8 would be playing in any given match. Each day they would probably be on the order of 15 matches. Okay, and each player would probably play a half to a third of those matches. So, you know, that gives you some idea of what the universe is like. Okay? The other thing that makes it a little bit more complicated still is that the players tend to play, most of the matches are doubles matches. So you would have two players against two players for every one. Okay? And so it's not just a question of modeling, and mine is better than Owen. The question would be, you know, are Owen and I better than Terry and Bush? Okay, and Terry and Bush wouldn't always play together very much. Okay, so you wouldn't necessarily know how to do very well as a team. So part of the modeling has to do with factoring team skills as well. Yeah.
Factoring in that, for example, you and someone else play your first match today, and someone else
play
your tenth match.
So one way that you might want to model is what about let's say things that go on beyond the scope of a match. So one way would be, what if I played a lot today, okay, and you're just starting, that I don't know how to model. I don't know if it's a question that's better to be warmed up or to be tired. What I will say is that a lot of phenomena in sports have been studied sort of suggest that people's performance is basically uniform. Regardless, the famous studies in basketball, where usually people in basketball, when they're shooting baskets, have this sense that they're hot. They're getting hard baskets, and they say, yeah, I'm on. And then they can't miss, they feel confident. But it turns out that the probability that basketball players will get the next basket in, given they got the last basket in, is it independent of whether they got the last basket in, or the last two baskets in, or the last three baskets in. So in general, a lot of these probabilities in sports seem to be independent, or fairly independent. So I'm comfortable with the fact that I didn't worry about that.
Any other questions about gambling or highlighting or anything like that? Okay, thank you very much.